Thanks again for tuning in for our Lake Effect Live panel discussion on the food economy. I'm Mitch Teich, joined in the Chase Building's Fishbowl at Water and Wisconsin by Paul Dittman of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, Nick George from the Midwest Food Processors Association, Jack Belke of Clement Sausage, and Shelley Jurowitz from the Milwaukee 7. Thanks again to all of you for being here. I want to ask about higher education, because there are a lot of people entering the food business from the university system in Wisconsin, and particularly the University of Wisconsin-Madison. How important is higher education to the future of the food economy here? Anybody?
I would say it's very important. You know, as Jack, I think, mentioned earlier, the industry is going high tech. I mean, it's been high tech, and it's getting there, and it's even getting more so. And I think that there's a big need for food scientists and for sanitation engineers and for everything. You know, we do a lot of work at the universities of Minnesota, Illinois, and Wisconsin on research, agricultural research. And, you know, the University of Wisconsin has done a lot of great things. You know, back in 1952, they developed an alfalfa that was disease resistant and could winterize, you know, not die over the winter. It's one of the big bases for our dairy industry. So, I mean, there's lots of stuff that the university does, and I think that people would be surprised at all the good scientists and engineers that are in the food industry.
I know a lot of people talk about the university's cheesemaking program as being largely responsible for maintaining the health of the cheese industry here.
And I would actually take it one step further. The state as a whole is seventh in patents for food processing and products. So the fact that you bring the R&D that's happening at the corporate level in with what's going on at academia, University of Wisconsin, Madison, it's a really powerful combination of resources coming together to make sure that this industry stays relevant. And even on the smaller scale, I mean, it's a wonderful story coming out of Gateway Technical College, where you've got a young entrepreneur creating a cholesterol-free dairy process. So, and he's already signed a contract with Walmart for his cheese products. So it's incredible the amount of R&D and innovation that's coming out of this state.
Well, and does that also become part of the recruiting process? Because that's one of those things that we always hear about the difficulty getting companies to locate here is, well, we just don't have trained workers. We don't have the education infrastructure. But it sounds like this is one example of an industry where the trained infrastructure, the employees are coming from Wisconsin.
I think it's definitely a part of the value proposition we put out. I do think we'd love to see some of that coursework here in the Milwaukee region, and we had a very exciting conversation yesterday with MATC, and they are ready to gear up with a variety of food science associate degrees. So I'd like to see, you know, some of that education happening right here in the region, but what we have available to us now is something that we can really tout.
Is the higher education system important in the sausage-making business?
Well, to support what they've said, actually a number of the manufacturers do have advanced degrees from the University of Wisconsin. My boss, for instance, Dr. Jim Clement, has a PhD in animal science from Madison, and it's amazing how many of the other meat companies, other food companies, he went to school with, and they create their own little network that they utilize. And each and every one of these manufacturers recognize the quality of education, I think, that's coming out of Wisconsin. I think the challenge is keeping the people here. And so we need more food companies coming in, and I think that we need more emphasis on building people throughout these organizations and, like I say, keeping them in Wisconsin.
I do think it's important that we pay attention to, while we have great concentration of talent in this industry now, a good portion of that talent is going to be retiring. So the pipeline of workforce is going to be critical.
How is the healthy foods movement impacting all of your lives? This is something that we hear a lot about, whether it's slow foods, organic foods, or just wanting to know where your food is coming from. And let me just go across the table. Jack Belke, people don't necessarily think of sausage when they're thinking of healthy foods, but are there things that your industry is doing that would dispel that notion, that this is actually part of what you do?
15 or 20 years ago, we, on either coast, because I've handled the U.S. for a long time, either side of the coast, you started to see natural, you started to see organic, you started to see no MSG. You started to see buzzwords that today are all part of our common language. And what we at Clements have done is we've set a course to separate ourselves from the big macro manufacturers. And what we want to be is we want to be more natural. We want to cut salt. We want to be gluten-free, no MSG, natural meats, local, sustainable. In fact, when Farm Aid came to Milwaukee this past fall, they normally bring with them their own already approved manufacturers. And we sat down with them, and they said, these are our criteria for you to be able to sell at our event. And a lot of it was you know, that local sustainability, buying from local farmers, buying from farmers that free-range their animals. And what we found was the approval process was of just a few weeks because we already met all the criteria. And I think that's where a lot of the small to mid-sized manufacturers need to be. The big guys, you know, they're into their macro business. But I think it's very important, and I think there are a lot of Wisconsin companies that fit that general size.
Shelley Jurowitz, is that part of the case that you make?
I think we can also, again, back on the food ingredient side of things, many of our food ingredients manufacturers are playing very well in the functional food space, that food space that's nutrition on the go, if you will. You're looking for calcium fortified, whole variety of additives that you can, and a lot of them naturals that you can put into your food products that, again, make it nutrition on the go. So I think, again, it's a real sweet spot for us to be playing with. It's a part of our strategy to grow jobs here in the region. And I think another great example was Nature's Path coming to Wisconsin, southeast Wisconsin, Sussex specifically, last year. And they really noticed the organic strength that we have here. So to put an organic cereals maker here in an old tombstone facility, Pete, so not only is it a great use of space that's already here, but again, it plays very well to the natural resources that we have here in organics and just in food manufacturing in general.
And Jack Belkey?
I'll support that by saying some of the newer ingredients out there, when you're trying to add health claims with the aging of America, you know, one of the big things that's not found in meat is fiber. And what we've done is we've gone through and done a bunch of scientific research now where we believe that we can add fiber to meat products, and so when people are looking at their total grams out there, that they can just pick it up naturally by having a brat or, you know, eating cereal or whatever the case may be. So there are things coming down the pipeline, I think, that'll make a lot of Wisconsin-made food more friendly to the nation.
And at the very least, you can have a whole wheat bun with the brat.
You got to be careful how much you put in there.
Nick George, talk about how this movement affects the food processing world.
Well, if I ever hit 60 years old, all that stuff's going out the window because I like all that other stuff that's not healthy. It's delicious. No, bottom line is this, customer demand. It's what the customers want. And that's what everybody's doing. It's like, what do the customer want? If they want something healthier, then now we got to figure it out. Sometimes that's not easy. Right now, you know, low sodium is a big deal, you know. Well, sometimes that doesn't work very well. So now you're looking at different sources of sodium, you know. They've gone to some of the sea salt stuff, you know. And so it's all about customer demand, and we're seeing it. And you know, for those companies that sell to food programs, like right now I'm thinking of like the Wisconsin Infant and Children Program, the federal government is demanding different things. No salt, no sugar, that kind of stuff. And so it's a challenge. It's a challenge. But if the customer wants it, then that's what you do.
Paul Dittman, earlier this week within this series, we had a feature on Organic Valley, which is if not the largest, certainly among the largest organic cooperatives in the country. There's a reason that it's in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's right. And that actually started as a produce pool. It was a group of people who got together living in west central Wisconsin and selling their vegetables together, and eventually transitioned to dairy, and now they've become the largest dairy organic dairy co-op in the country. And it's a tremendous business model. And they've made a conscious decision to stay where they are in Lafarge, you know, and in an area that was economically depressed, and now they've got a lot of jobs, good jobs, well-paying, have added a lot to that community.
When you're looking at the organics industry, the functional food industry, even the food ingredients industry, they're all tracking $20 billion a year for annualized growth. So it's ripe for us to be playing in that space with the resources that we have and where the industry trends are going.
Right, and even through the recession, the organic foods demand increased 11% in 2009. A lot of people thought that we'd see that tail off in 2009, but it kept on growing.
When you talked earlier, too, about the dairy industry, where it's at, my family actually has an Organic Valley farm, one of the original ones on the western side of the state, and my family just recently went back and been out of the milking business for probably 10 years or so, and just recently went back in, bought a couple of hundred cows, and they're back into that side of it, because you can make money on the organic side of milking. It's more difficult on the traditional side.
Shelley Jurowitz, you grew up on a farm.
Popcorn farm.
A
yes.
Popcorn.
People didn't know they existed.
but I wonder if you see a different climate, and you, I imagine, weren't necessarily involved in the economic end of things when you were young. But do you see do you see the changes in the farming world today versus when you were growing up on this farm?
I would have to say I've been so involved in the food manufacturing side, so I'm not. I think, Paul, you're going to be a much better person to speak to that. I know that the popcorn farm is now a golf course, so.
I wanted to ask this question. We hear a lot about food deserts, the notion that in the middle of Milwaukee, even though we are close enough to farms that people can go to farmers markets practically every weekend, at least as long as it stays warm enough to do that, it's still difficult to buy produce in the inner city in a place like Milwaukee. Is there more that the state of Wisconsin, for example, can be doing to ensure access to things like fresher foods versus things like, you know, ho-hos?
Yeah, I think we can't really force it, but what we can do is make sure that any food safety regulations are common sense regulations, that it isn't putting too much of a burden on, especially smaller scale producers who would have a difficult time meeting any regulations that are expensive. We can support the community supported ag movement. We can support the Buy Local, Buy Wisconsin movement. We've got grants for supporting Buy Local, Buy Wisconsin, the Something Special from Wisconsin. We can help people set up farmers markets. We can't force a farmers market, but if the farmers and the consumers want it, we can come in and help support that.
What's wrong with ho-hos? I find it amazing that there are these food deserts because there are so many good distributors out there right now, and you can get, you know, fresh food everywhere, and the farmers markets and Paul mentioned the Buy Local, Buy Wisconsin thing, where the, you know, DATCAP is actually getting out there and helping, getting information out to people. So I find that hard to believe, but you know, even so, there is still good nutritious food out there. We have a very diverse, safe, affordable food supply in this country, and I've seen some statistics in other countries, and we have it very good here, and that's something that I think that we have to remind ourselves of and learn to appreciate, because it is safe, it is diverse, and it's a good system.
One of the things locally that we've seen, obviously Clements is down in Bayview, is that's one of the neighborhoods that's a bit challenged sometimes. It could be considered a desert. And a number of the local companies have gotten together, and there are plots of land that they're actually making, call them large sandbox, if you will. And the local community's coming together, and they have a space to garden. And some of the local gardening experts, if you will, are coming in helping these people grow their own vegetables. And I think what you're seeing, too, you go to the State Fair, you see some of the other inner city locally grown companies that are out there, is I think that's we as corporate citizens need to do what we can to continue to support these things. It shouldn't necessarily be a government function. I think we have an obligation out there when you see these plots, and I thought for sure, because there is I don't want to call it gang activity, but there are cells within the neighborhoods. You'd think they'd go in and destroy those gardens. And in fact, I walk by it each day because I walk around the neighborhood. And I looked at the end of the season, they had the most beautiful vegetables. And you think, desert? Not necessarily. I mean, it was a good corporate citizen that came up, set this whole thing up. And I think it'd be a great way to use some of our vacant land or buildings that need to be demolished, and we can add a positive impact to the community.
Nick George?
Kind of on a related issue. We have this organization out there called Feed America, right? And we were talking about that a little earlier. Feed America throws away billions of pounds of fresh produce because people don't take it. And I mean, there is a network out there that can provide a lot of good fresh food. Problem with fresh produce is that it's fresh.
It has a shelf life. Yeah,
it's got a shelf life. You know, but there's a lot of stuff out there, and I think communication is important.
Shelley Jerowitz.
I think when you're talking about the food deserts, in particular in our inner cities and in our more densely populated areas, they definitely do exist. And part of the disconnect is, and I've heard this from some of the folks at MPS, that some of the kids don't even understand what a full tomato looks like. They only have ever seen the slice of a tomato. So that can start to translate into people seeing produce and product that's grown here and not really even knowing what to do with it. So the work that Jack was just talking about, creating these urban gardens, I think is just a wonderful thing to connect our youth and our families to how food is grown here.
We have just a couple minutes left, but one of the coolest things about this series has been opening people's eyes to some things about Wisconsin's food economy that people really had no idea about. So before we wrap up, I wanted to go around the table and have each of you maybe give us one fact that would kind of bring us full circle and open people's eyes to something that maybe they ought to know about what happens in terms of food here. And we'll start with Jack Belke and just work our way across the table.
Well, Mitch, I think you brought a point up earlier. You wanted a tour of our factory, and then you questioned whether or not you would necessarily want to go into a meat processing plant. And I told you that you'd be welcomed with open arms, that when you go through and you look at the raw materials that we use, it's the same raw materials you're buying in the grocery store, be it the steaks, be it the roast, be it the very large pieces of meat that's out there. And most people think, oh, it's... you don't want to have bologna because there's parts as parts, and that's not necessarily true.
You'd rather watch sausage being made than watch politics being made.
Yeah, and actually when you see it that way, it's more fulfilling than what you might think.
Shelley Jerowitz?
I think piggybacking on Jack, well, there's been a lot of great facts that have come out of the research we've done, being number two for organic production, fourth in the nation for processed food. There's a wealth of data around that we can be really proud of. But what has excited me the most is when I've gotten into the businesses and to learn that Kikkoman puts out 33 million gallons of soy sauce a year, and it takes 6 months to make a batch of soy sauce. And you look at Chris Hansen, the world's largest producer of enzymes, which has been here for 82 years. Those are the stories that I think people can really gravitate to and take home for a dinner conversation.
Nick George?
I agree. I think the more that people learn about food, the better off. And we're always surprised at how little people do know about food. And, you know, if you ever have an opportunity to go through a food processing facility, do it. It's cool. You'll be amazed at all the high-tech equipment, how clean it is, and how efficient it is.
And finally, Paul Dittman.
Yeah, following up on some of those comments, I think people would just be surprised at how many jobs are created by the food processing and food growing industry in the state of Wisconsin. And they're good jobs. They're good paying jobs. They have benefits. Yeah, I think people would be really amazed at that.
Well, that might not be the last word on the issue. It is the last word we have time for. We have many thanks to pass along, especially to our guests, Paul Dittman, Jack Belke, Nick George, and Shelley Jerowitz, for joining us behind the desk today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to our studio audience for being here, to the management of the Chase Tower at Water and Wisconsin for this fantastic space, and to Altera Coffee for keeping people down here fueled. Thanks to our engineers, Tom May and John Strelicki, for the solid technical support. Thanks to the Lake Effect cast of thousands, including Bonnie North, Stephanie Lecce, and Dan Harmon. And also to Annalise Hensel, the executive producer of Project Milwaukee. I'm Mitch Teich. Thanks to you for listening. You can hear some of the highlights from this week's Project Milwaukee series on Lake Effect Weekend, Saturday and Sunday at 2, or you can revisit all of these highlights and every Lake Effect from days past on WUWM.com. If you're looking for Project Milwaukee, though, we have a special Project Milwaukee page. You'll find the button at WUWM.com. Fresh Air is next from WUWM and WUWM HD1 Milwaukee Public Radio. Have a great day.